everyone for making it out today. And thank you to our visitors as well for being with us. It's normally better than this, okay, with the sermon. On the spot, our preacher is sick, so keep that in mind. You may hear a much better constructed sermon if you were here. All right. Okay, so I may draw some stuff up here, just kind of help us picture some of these things that we're going to talk about. We'll be pretty much primarily in Joshua chapter 10. And there's so much that can be taken out of this chapter that it's pretty much made for a sermon. And I don't think even then we can really deal with the entire chapter because there is just so much here. But I'll start reading chapter 10 of Joshua in verse 1. It says, "As soon as Adoni-Zedek, king of Jerusalem, heard how Joshua had captured Ai and had devoted it to destruction, doing to Ai and its king as he had done to Jericho and its king, and how the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and were among them, he feared greatly, because Gibeon was a great city, like one of the royal cities, and because it was greater than Ai, and all its men were warriors. So Adoni-Zedek, king of Jerusalem, sent to Hoham, king of Hebron, Hiram, king of Jarmuth, Japhia, king of Lachish, and Debir, king of Eglon, saying, 'Come up to me and help me, and let us strike Gibeon, for it has made peace with Joshua and with the people of Israel.' Then the five kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, the king of Eglon, gathered their forces and went up with all their armies and encamped against Gibeon and made war against it. And the men of Gibeon sent to Joshua at a camp in Gilgal, saying, 'Do not relax your hand from your servants. Come to us quickly and save us and help us, for all the kings of the Amorites who dwell in the hill country are gathered against us.' So Joshua went up from Gilgal, he and all the people of war with him, and all the mighty men of valor. And the Lord said to Joshua, 'Do not fear them, for I have given them into your hands. Not a man of them shall stand before you.' So Joshua came upon them suddenly, having marched up all night from Gilgal. And the Lord threw them into a panic before Israel, who struck them with a great blow at Gibeon, and chased them by the way of the ascent of Beth Horon, and struck them as far as Azekah and Makkedah. And as they fled before Israel, while they were going down the ascent of Beth Horon, the Lord threw down large stones from heaven on them as far as Azekah, and they died. There were more who died because of the hailstones than the sons of Israel killed with the sword. At that time, Joshua spoke to the Lord in the day when the Lord gave the Amorites over to the sons of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, 'Sun stand still at Gibeon, and moon in the valley of Aijalon.' And the sun stood still and the moon stopped until the nation took vengeance on their enemies. Is this not written in the book of Joshua? The sun stopped in the midst of heaven and did not hurry to set for about a whole day. There has been no day like it before or since, when the Lord heeded the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel. So Joshua returned and all Israel with him to the camp of Gilgal." Okay. One thing to remember, if we're going to take a look at this chapter, I guess two things. One, the Bible does not always chronologically account for everything in order every time. Every time it tells us a story, it doesn't describe from the very beginning to the very end in exactly that order. Sometimes it jumps around a little bit, okay? And this is certainly the case in this chapter. Because in verse 15, we get the impression, okay, the sun stands still, the moon's hanging out, standing still. And then in verse 15 it says, "So Joshua returned and all Israel with him to the camp at Gilgal." Okay? And then in the very next verse it says, "These five kings," the ones we were talking about earlier, "fled and hid themselves in the cave at Makkedah." And then the report is brought to Joshua and they go and they deal with that, but they do a lot more than just deal with these kings. So just to get kind of a rough picture what we're dealing with here. Let's just say that this is where the Israelites were in Gilgal before this all began, okay? And so we got this path,
kind of goes up here and it kind of comes back down here. And then up here, this is Ai, where they had just been victorious. And as we come down here, then right here we've got Gibeon, where all the trouble is happening. Okay. Then the path kind of goes up a little bit more like this. And then it begins to descend, not just southward, but also downhill at the same time. Okay. And way down here, we'll just mark it with an M. This is Makkedah. Okay, this is somewhere near here is where this cave is that these kings are hiding. Okay. Up here, actually kind of about this way, you have a valley. And that's the valley of Aijalon. First, the Bible does not always chronologically describe everything that it tells us. Second, it's almost humorous sometimes what the Bible does not tell us, things that we have to figure out on our own. And it's only through our study of locations, putting together maps, and very carefully dissecting these accounts of where the tribes' territories were, that we can put this together and have a reasonable idea of how this went down. Okay, so it starts at Gilgal. Like we read about. One more thing to depict it. This is just a very rough depiction. It's not exactly where these locations are, but we've got these different cities, okay, that surround Makkedah, okay? All right, and so these are where these kings come from that have joined forces together to go up here and fight at Gibeon. Okay. And there's paths that lead to all these cities. That's just how you get to each of them. There's a way to get to each of them. Okay. Obviously, there's paths. But everybody's at Gilgal. They've just been victorious over Ai after suffering a humiliating defeat against Ai not too long before. And to set the stage a little bit more, we've got to understand where Israel is in this situation, okay? They are just entering the promised land. They've only had two successful battles within the promised land God has given them. One at Jericho, which was their first, and one at Ai, which was their most recent, right before the story. Just a couple, it's hard to tell if it was a couple weeks or a couple months. It wasn't long, though, before this, that they crossed the Jordan River into the Promised Land. So this is happening very close together here. They haven't been here for long, in other words. The Lord held back the waters of the Jordan when it was during its flood stage, as the Bible mentions to us. And it mentions how that was in the time of harvest, so it's probably sometime April, May time frame. March to April when that happened, maybe, and April to May when this happened, maybe. Okay. Yes, it's the most reasonable one I can come up with. And the point is that by the time May gets there, there's already a fairly long day in this part of the world. Okay. Anyways, all the kings assemble, and why? Because Gibeon's made peace with Israel. That has obviously scared the king of Jerusalem enough to ask all these other kings for help to put a stop to what he sees as a really huge problem right on his doorstep. Because as mentioned in the passage, Gibeon is not a weak city. It's a town of warriors. And they've already heard stories about what happened to Og, king of Bashan, and Sihon, king of Amorites, on their way in before they've even come into the promised land during their time in the desert. So they've heard the stories. These people that live in this land have heard what their God has done for them. That was pretty clear in Jericho because Rahab had heard about it. And now, all of a sudden, a powerful town has just become friends with these guys, these Israelites. This is unacceptable for the king of Jerusalem. Do you remember back in 2008 when Russia attacked Georgia? And that was like a big deal, and there were all these problems. And
Russia was not happy because Georgia wanted to join NATO and some other things. There were some things that made Russia feel like, you know, if this happens, this is like right on our doors. This is the bridge between Europe and Asia, and this is a big problem, so we have to do something about this. And I imagine the situation here is kind of similar. These guys feel threatened because of this approaching power that's made peace with an existing power. And something has to be done about it. I mentioned the Bible doesn't tell us everything, because what it really, what it doesn't make it very clear is how far these guys had to walk. This is the camp at Gilgal, like we said to begin with. Okay. The attack begins here at Gibeon. All the kings join forces. They make their way to Gibeon and attack it. Gibeon sends messengers all the way to Gilgal to tell Joshua, please help us. You've got to come like right now. Depending on what path they could have taken, because I suppose there's a couple different ways they could have gone, but at least what we're talking about here is a distance of 18 miles from Gilgal to Gibeon. And not only that, but as you're traveling from Gilgal to Gibeon, another thing that we've learned is that this was a mostly uphill journey. Okay? In fact, it doesn't even stop going uphill at Gibeon. It continues to go uphill all the way up to the Ajalon Valley, where it starts to finally go downhill again. So think about this. Okay? Think about this time frame of this battle. When the help is requested in verse 6, okay, and then the men of Gibeon sent to Joshua at the camp in Gilgal, saying, do not relax your hand from your servants. Come to us quickly. Come up to us quickly and save us and help us. Okay, and we get a little bit of a clue in verse 9. It says, so Joshua came upon them suddenly, having marched up all night from Gilgal. As we've discussed before, when it says up somewhere, that doesn't mean that they just went there. That means they went uphill. So they walked 18 miles uphill at night, okay, in an area that, who knows, maybe from here to here they would have been familiar with the path because they'd already been to Ai twice. But what about from here to here? So far we haven't heard anything about, you know, traveling to Gibeon, or certainly not at night. And so we're talking about an 18-mile journey uphill at night in unfamiliar territory to arrive at a battle that's already taking place. This looks like it's terrible odds if you're just betting on human terms. Who would bet on this, right? So they arrive at Gibeon, and the way that it words it here in verse 9 that we just read, so Joshua came upon them suddenly, having marched up all night from Gilgal. How do you come up on an army suddenly when the army is already there? Think about that. How does that happen? They're already there, and yet Israel marches there through the night and comes upon them suddenly. What does that even mean? As best as I can conclude, what we're talking about here is that they did march all night there, and they would have arrived earlier in the morning than the battle was going to begin in the first place. That's how they come upon them suddenly. It's, we're going to fight, okay, as the sun is coming up, we better be ready to step off and start this battle again. So before that, the Israelites would have arrived in order to come upon them suddenly. And from that moment on, God just takes control. The Israelites are fighting, but God is doing the real work. Okay. Verse 10, and the Lord threw them into a panic before Israel, who struck them with a great blow at Gibeon and chased them by the way of the ascent of Beth Horon and struck them as far as Azekah and Makkedah. Okay. The ascent of Beth Horon is right here between Gibeon and the Ajalon Valley. This is uphill. Okay. And I think this is Beth Horon. I'm pretty sure that's Beth Horon. Okay, so that's where they're talking about.
And another note is, in order to march all night there, okay, it probably would have, some estimates say it would have taken a healthy, like, fighting man about 6 or 7 hours to make this trip, okay? So they probably started marching around 9:30 or 10 at night, the night before. Probably about the time they would have been thinking about going to bed. Because the sun would have been down by that time, or the last rays of it just disappearing. It's about time to go to bed, settle in for the night. Only, you know, it's not. It's time to get up and march. And so, think about this. If this happened on a Monday, let's just say, it probably had to. Mondays are terrible enough. So, they would have gotten up Monday morning when the sun came up, right? Probably about 5 in the morning. Because if you've ever been out camping, it doesn't matter when you went to sleep or if you slept the night before. Your body knows it's time to get up when it sees the sun. It's time to go, even if you're tired, okay? So on that bad Monday morning, let's say, they woke up. They did all the stuff they did that day. It was a normal day as far as they could tell until it became time to go to bed. And then there would have been shouts and the word would have gone out and everybody would have been getting there. Swords and everything strapped on to make their way over to Gibeon. Okay, so they march all night there, and here we are. And now what it is it's Tuesday morning at, let's say, about 4 in the morning, before the sun is really up, but maybe when the first rays are showing, and that's when they came upon them suddenly. Okay, and like I said, the Lord takes over, and Joshua offers a very interesting prayer. In verse 12, it says, "Sun stand still at Gibeon, and moon in the valley of Aijalon. And the sun stood still, and the moon stopped until the nation took vengeance on their enemies. Is this not written in the book of Joshua? The sun stopped in the midst of heaven and did not hurry to set for about a whole day." Well, for keeping track of this, start off on Monday. March all night. Tuesday morning, we arrive at the sea. Tuesday in the late morning or early afternoon, Joshua offers this prayer. Now, it's still Tuesday because the sun's still up. But if we had a stopwatch going through all of this, it would be well into Wednesday by the time the sun even bothered to move again. Because after that prayer is offered, it stays there for a day. It doesn't even move. So now, by this time, a day later, after that prayer was offered, it's Wednesday around 10 o'clock in the morning or noon. Remember when we got up, 5 in the morning on Monday, and here it is, and we don't know what is going on, because when is this day ever going to end? Oh, Mondays were terrible. This is worse. But God's fighting for Israel. That's the only saving grace in all of this. This is God's battle, and he's going to have it his way. And then it says, in verse 16, these five kings fled and hid themselves at the cave of Makkedah. Okay, and that's down there in the south, southern area. There's a sense of urgency that you get here in verse 18. Actually, I'll back up to verse 17. And it was told to Joshua, the five kings have been found, hidden at the cave in Makkedah. Joshua said, roll large stones against the mouth of the cave and set men by it to guard them, but do not stay there yourselves. Pursue your enemies. Attack their rear guard. Do not let them enter their cities, for the Lord your God has given them into your hand. When Joshua and the sons of Israel had finished striking them with a great blow until they were wiped out, and when the remnant that remained of them had entered into the fortified cities, then all the people returned safe to Joshua and camp at Makkedah. Not a man moved his tongue against any of the people of Israel. Let's try to piece this together here. What's happened is, after the prayer has been offered in Gibeon, you remember we read about the hailstones of the Lord striking them up the ascent of Beth Horon and down, and I think Azekah's out here somewhere. I'm pretty sure it's out here somewhere. And so as these Israelites are pursuing the enemy, finally going downhill, by the way, after all that uphill marching and fighting, the Lord is throwing hailstones on these enemies. Okay, and until eventually the hailstones stop at about Azekah, and they make it down to Makkedah,
these kings, and that's where they hide. If you want to add up the math from here, going to Gibeon and all the way south, we're probably talking about a distance of like 40 miles. It's a long ways. So that's why I believe that this passage is not chronologically in perfect order. It's written perfectly, but it's not in chronological order all the way, because if you read it in verse 28, this is on the same day as Joshua saying, chase them and fight them, don't let them get back to their cities. In verse 28, it says, as for Makkedah, Joshua captured it on that day and struck it and its king with the edge of the sword. He devoted every person to destruction, every person in it. He left none remaining, and he did to the king of Makkedah just as he had done to the king of Jericho. There's a sense of urgency in Joshua's instructions to his people. You know, he said, fine, put some rocks on the cave and keep a couple people there to watch it, but don't stay there. You've got to go get these guys before they make it back to their cities. Okay? What this is telling me is this is all happening on the same day. They're not going to march all night, 18 miles, come up here even further, come down here, and then say, yeah, let's go back. And then somehow on that same day come back all this way down to Makkedah and do some more damage? I don't think so. This is one of those cases where we have to figure out the chronology a little bit. And this is what, one of the points I'm trying to get across with this whole thing is that we can really mess up and God can fix it somehow in ways that we can't predict ahead of time. Okay? As they're chasing them, some of them, there is a small remnant that it tells us that gets back to their cities where they started from. But what that means, you know, most of them are wiped out. So by the time that these remnants make it back to these cities that they came from at first, there's almost no fighting men left. When the kings are destroyed here, and that's outside of the cave, and they're left to, you know, to hang until the evening. So now we're probably talking, you know, Wednesday evening-ish time frame. These guys have been up and moving and fighting for almost like 60 hours straight. Okay. What this allows Israel to do, actually, you know what? Where did this whole thing start, anyways? This whole situation is pretty insane. But here's where it started. It actually started as a result of a mistake. If we go back to Joshua chapter 9, something that we're pretty familiar with. Some captions say the Gibeonite deception, whatever, it may say something like that. Chapter 9, verse 14, it says, so the men took some of their provisions, but did not ask counsel from the Lord. And Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live, and the leaders of the congregation swore to them. And then they find out that they were tricked. It's not like it seemed. You're not from a country far away. You're from right here, where we're headed. But now we got to protect them, because we swore we would. We don't have a choice. We have to keep our word, right? I think that's such an important part of this verse. Chapter 9, verse 14, but did not ask counsel from the Lord. We can read that now and say, yeah, they should have asked counsel from the Lord. It's obvious to us. But think about them. They see these guys in worn-out clothes and with breadcrumbs and all this kind of stuff, intentionally trying to look as if they've traveled a long ways. They're God's people. You know, surely they wanted to do something. They wanted to do the right thing. You've probably seen like a homeless person standing on a corner somewhere, an intersection, and it might have made you feel bad because, like, what am I supposed to do about this? Shouldn't I help him? I'm a Christian after all. I mean, can I do anything? Should I do anything? And there's kind of an inner dialogue that talks about this when you see these kind of things. It's possible that maybe they felt the same way. Look at these guys. They're patched up clothing and they're worn out sandals. I mean, can't we do anything for them? And since they're from so far away, I mean, why not make peace with them, right? It's the right thing to do. They didn't ask counsel of the Lord. And as a result, not too far after that, you have their town attacked by five different kings, and then Israel's brought into it to keep their word. However, the important thing, one of the important things, we're not going to go through the rest of chapter 10. Okay? That's the main point I want to make, is what God is capable of, what he is providing on our behalf. He can help us to do things that we would look at and say, impossible. I can't march 18 miles uphill at night. Okay? We would have had the moonlight. That's one thing we can figure out, is because by the time that prayer was offered about 10 that next morning, the moon was in the Ajalon Valley, which is right here. And this is east, just same as it would be true to a map. And this is west, and so the moon would have been in the west. So that means that as they marched all night, the moon would have been lit up, shining overhead, and then would have been working its way toward the west to set on that day when the battle started. So they would have had the moonlight at least. But the precision as well. These weren't just hailstones that were killing everybody. They were only killing the enemies. God's clearly behind this battle. Another thing that happens is all of these towns were eventually going to have to be conquered by Israel anyways. Okay? This was all part of the land that God was giving them. One by one, they would have had to have been eliminated in order for God's people to move into the land that had been promised. But instead of going in a one-by-one fashion, like they went to Jericho, just Jericho, and then they went to Ai, okay, and now they're headed to Gibeon. What God has done by fighting on the Israelites' behalf and allowing this battle to go like this is that these five cities that we probably call them like city-states nowadays, they're like city-state-type nations, what's happened is they've got barely any fighting men left. They're left virtually undefended because of what's happened from Gibeon all the way down here. And I'll just point it out that if we were to finish chapter 10, we would see, not on the same day as all this happened, but the way it's worded, it looks like over a period of a couple weeks or so, that Israel did go one by one and destroyed these cities. Actually, I'll take that back. They did not destroy all of the cities. They defeated the cities, and they set fire to some, but they didn't just, you know, destroy them all. And there were a couple other cities in addition that they also went through in this time period as they were finishing this up. So the point is, these places were left so weak and undefended that Israel could easily go in and sweep them out the way it describes in the remainder of chapter 10 of Joshua. Easy. But that wouldn't have been so easy if God hadn't been fighting on their behalf and killing those enemies with hailstones and giving those enemies into their hands as they ran south downhill toward Makkedah. This was a fight that God was going to win. And because of that, he carried out his promise. He was faithful to his promise. I will give you this land. And for some of these places, they barely even had to fight to take it over because of what God had done. So I guess the thing is if things seem impossible, they're not. Simply because I don't know what God's plan is. Because all that Joshua was told initially was, hey, we need help. And then God offered some reassurance and said, don't worry about it. About your enemies, because I'm going to give them over to you. And notice the lack of questions on Joshua's part. We don't have any question recorded. What, God, how is it going to happen? Is that going to happen? We're not going to have a repeat of Ai, are we? Like the first time we went there. How long is it going to take, God? I mean, are we going to get tired and are we going to... We don't have a single question recorded from Joshua about any of this. He put his faith in God. That's it. And so while I hope we don't ever have to go through something like this, because this is pretty crazy, Every single one of us has problems. Every single one of us has tests. Every single one of us has trials, small annoyances, large problems, everything. A whole spectrum of human difficulty. We experience that. If we would pull our experience together just in this room, we would realize that collectively we've been through quite a bit of things in our lives. Okay? The thing that sets us apart from someone hoping on luck or good chance or anything like that is that we have a God that we trust in, a God that we pray to, a God that we offer up praise to, a God whose word we read because we want to know what he has to say. Because this life isn't just for whatever. It's not just to spend as much time as you can, grabbing as much as you can, as quickly as you can before you die. Surely more to life than that. And the God that led these people to victory is the God that we pray to. It doesn't change. The same as that God today is as he was back then. And if he can do something amazing like this, then I think he can probably, with no problems, take care of my problems, which are pretty minuscule in comparison to this, right? My stuff is no big deal compared to this. So I need to put my trust in God because he's capable. If he can lead men through battle, then he can lead me through life successfully. Thanks for bearing with me. I was not ready for this today. This is a good reason why you need to have a Bible study going at any given time. Because you may need to immediately draw from that. Because it's necessary, okay? We say, we don't go a single Sunday without saying read your Bible, but I'll say it again, read your Bible. You might need it more than you think, quicker than you think. Okay, so, trust in God because he is capable. I think that's probably the summary of this whole thing. We've got plenty of examples of it, and we don't need to doubt it. Okay, so if today is the day to become a Christian, to be baptized into that family of God, then certainly why wait? It's possible for us to have that baptism occur today. There's no reason to wait if today is the day. And if you're already baptized and you're having troubles, you have doubts, you have issues, you have problems, you have setbacks, whatever you have that you need prayers for, please make your way forward as we stand and sing a song. Just let them.